Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. The program focuses on Out of This World information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know with everyone's help, we'll do it. We'll make this planet a better place. Today's show, during the first hour, I gave out channel messages from both Nostradamus and President Kennedy. And we now have a gentleman on the line who's a fascinating fellow named Chris Mulligan. He's the publisher of Triune Publishing in Eugene, Oregon. He's been interested in the assassination of President Kennedy for many years. His father, actually, his interest was started actually with his father, who did work for the OSS, originally the OSS and later the CIA. And this led him to research the assassination of President John F. Kennedy and other secret societies, including Skull and Bones. I'm so happy to have Chris on today. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am, and thank you, sir.
Good, good. We tried to call you earlier repeatedly, and I'm so glad that we got a hold of you finally. So we had some trouble. We had some trouble with our phone lines. Anyway, Chris, tell me a little bit about your father and how you got interested in this, in the President Kennedy.
Well, he got involved in intelligence work as an exchange student to China at the age of 18 in the mid-30s. And then he was supposed to graduate. He graduated in 39 and was supposed to go to graduate school in Switzerland about international relations. That didn't happen. He ended up in Washington, D.C., working in the basement of the Library of Congress under Archibald MacLeish, who was OSS and also Order of Skull and Bones. And then my father got involved in deep politics during World War II, started working in psychological warfare, and was in both OSS and G2, which is military intelligence, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he made a trip to Vietnam in 56, and then left that started him leaving the agency, and he started leaving the agency in 57 and left completely by 59. And then he started talking to me in 69. He took me in a room and sat me down with a professor from Vanderbilt, a Dr. D.F. Fleming, and he looked at me and he said, "The Vietnam War is about drugs. There's these secret societies." Then he said, and communism's all a sham. These same secret societies are behind it all. It's all a big game." And I just, you know, at that point in time, this is the day before my 20th birthday, 1969, I'm thinking my dad's nuts. And I'm a teenager. I knew more about drugs than he did. And then a little light bulb came on my head. I thought he was having the proverbial drug talk with me. He hadn't had the other one. I already had was married and had a 6-month-old kid. But I thought he was going to, you know, tell me to stop smoking pot because it was the late 60s and I was growing my hair long and smoking some pot. But he didn't. He told me all about his intelligence career. And then he started telling me about how Vietnam, they were playing out a lose scenario. And I was a teenager and still grappling with the idea that, wait a minute, we have war, and you give me a gun and you tell me to go kill that person to the death, but there's rules. then that they're you know, some people are playing out a lose scenario in Vietnam. And then you start talking to me about psychological warfare and propaganda and what they called sway pieces, and soon became very apparent that I had no idea of what they were talking about. I started to do research and did research for many years, and came to the conclusion that here's how the secret societies run the world. It's a leviathan of three levels, and each level has three parts. The top top level is mining, metal, and money, and they just own that lock, stock, and barrel. And when I look at Skull and Bones, they own a lot of mining stock and a lot of mining companies, involved in a lot of mining history. And then we're at a very active level in the middle, theater of war, drugs, guns, and arms, and oil. And it was a guy from Skull and Bones that made gasoline for the very first time from petroleum in 1855, Dr. Benjamin Silliman Jr. And the only reason we go to the oil stores because they own it. And then the next level is media, or they use the drugs. The only reason why we have the prohibitions is so that there's a black market which allows forces from the shadows to sell plants for many times for more than gold. And they have these big slush funds that then allow them to buy up all the other industries, and that's why we have, six companies own all the media. Not all of it, but
most
the majority of it.
Majority, yeah.
And then you have movies/music. They have to affect that very dearly. And then the last thing is quote-unquote magic, the ability to hoodwink us. And their preponderance to scare the heck out of us by doing mass trauma rituals.
Mm.
And at its core, the Kennedy assassination was a mass trauma ritual.
Mm.
You kill the king and you take his power. You can read a book called On Golden Bough, written in the 30s by James Frazier. And you kill the king, you take his power, and especially if you do that, I don't know if you've been to Dealey Plaza. I have. Mm-hmm. I made the same comment that most people do the first time they're when you visit there. You say, boy, I didn't realize how small this was.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, it is a ritual kill site. It's got a trident. You've got an obelisk, a pyramid. It's right on Bloody Elm Street, right where the first Masonic temple was.
Wow.
And it's right near the 33rd degree parallel.
Really?
And it was done on the day 11/22.
I was going to ask you about those numbers. Are those significant numbers for the occult?
Well, if you look into classical numerology, you find that 11 and 22 are the highest numbers in there. There's no numbers higher. There's no numbers in between. And one of their main meanings is a mastery and super mastery. So if you kill the king on an occult significant day, 11/22, and, in a very public way, in a bloody murder that puts you into shock, and you are silently telling the people, the populace, that you are the masters, then, we must be, quote-unquote, the slaves.
Mm.
And if you look into Skull and Bones and you see that a lot of the members there were that started it, went to the University of Berlin and went to classes taught by Hegel. And this is Hegel, George Frederick Hegel, the philosopher, whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm.
You read him, and one thing he talked about was this bondage relationship. And so it's a bondage relationship that these secret societies want to have with the population, and they go about doing this through occult rituals. It was just amazing. I'm a musician. I like books very well. I'm a voracious reader. But I didn't set out my life to become a publisher. But once I became a publisher stand on our Constitution, which, talks about the press and the importance of the press, that would not refuse books because of their political bent, would actually stand up and go to court. I got some amazing books. One of them was Sinister Forces by Peter Lavinda. In there, he shows how a lot of the people involved with psychological warfare are also involved with the occult. And you have a lot of these, such as the Son of Sam and other things, were occult killings that were done on occult significant days. And again, it's to put the population into shock. Mm-hmm. It's like the Kennedy assassination. The Kennedy assassination was one of the big front doors of part of this operation. And where was Kennedy going to speak? He was going to speak at the International Trade Mart. And then what did we have, in 2001? We had 9/11 at the International Trade Tower.
Oh, interesting.
Where, mm-hmm. where and look at all the time, effort, and money that was spent to focus our, attention on these two towers in New York. I mean, there are parts of so many movies and all these things, and to become this big symbol of America. And then, what happened on, the morning of 9/11? Well, we right. sat in front of a television set that's running at 60 cycles per second, which will put you into a trance.
Right.
And then what did we see over and over and over? And I cannot say the word over enough times.
Sure.
We saw that plane slicing into the building.
Right.
And you've been on an airplane, right?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You sit next to the person next to you, and you don't know them. Mm-hmm. And you don't maybe know anybody else on the plane, but there's a bit of a camaraderie there because, you're all going on this journey together. You're all in it together, right? Once that door closes, especially. And then you've been in an office building, right?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And these people, they're there because, they got to buy Johnny and Susie braces, and, they're taking care of the family. They're innocent people that we have in the office, and we have innocent people on the plane. And we sit there and watch this plane going in, and it's classic mind control.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's trauma.
Interesting.
Interesting. There's hundreds of people on the airplane that are dying.
Right.
Okay. And there's hundreds of people in that office building that are dying.
And
is it?
And Chris, not to interrupt, and I appreciate you so much for sharing that with us. But the other thing too, all these recent shootings, you think it's the same thing happening, for example, in Santa Barbara a few days ago and the Paris attacks?
Yes, I think they're not just odd terrorist attacks that happen that we're responding to.
Right, right.
I'm sure that not everyone is a planned attack, but I do see a pattern there. And when you look at history, you find that these things that were sold to us as, these lone attacks turn out not to be.
Well, one of the things I have to share with you and my many listeners around the world is that on my Facebook page, someone had studied the people who were grieving at the site of the Sandy Hook murders, shootings, I think that was last year, at another shooting that happened in Colorado, Aurora, Colorado, I believe, and in Oregon recently, a couple of months ago. And each of those three events, guess what they found? They found the same lady, identical lady, crying her eyes out. And later it turns out that she's a crisis actor hired by the U.S. federal FEMA, a government agency, who's been sent to each of these things to create a feeling, to create the fear and add to the trauma. It's crazy.
The sad thing is, all we know, all we know is what we're being fed.
That's true.
Okay. And one thing is that, you know, I've studied a lot is conspiracy theory and how that is used. And, I'll put it this way. Yes, I do think there is something hinky going on. And when you look at it, I do think there is. But I'm loath to say that everything is. And it's very interesting, and I think that, you know, a lot of it is distraction. And to me, when I look at these the secret societal system and their actions and their psychological warfare, I mean they're very pragmatic, and the way to quote unquote beat them is to not to try and play their silly games and try and think that we're going to, you know, outmaneuver them. But the thing that we still have a constitutional republic here. When you say pledge allegiance to the flag, it still talks about a republic. As much as they've captured a lot of the functioning of that government and the functioning of a lot of things, we still have that, and we still have a functioning democracy in that we can vote. Yes, they have stolen a lot of elections, okay, but what we can do is there's way more of us than there are of them, and if enough of us show up at the polls, they can't, and especially if we, you know, we start locally. I mean, it's sad to say, but if you've ever gone to most any local, you know, meetings where our future is being decided, you find that there's very few of the public there. And we need to, you know, yes, it's terrible. We, you know, they keep us scratching for a living and looking down. But we do have the ability to this 2016 election's going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, they're trying to push, you know, another Bush-Clinton down on us, and which is just the same crime family that's been running the coup. Yeah. What happened, you know, when they murdered John Fitzgerald Kennedy, it was a coup d'etat.
That's true, it was.
And these people are still in power.
That's true, they are.
And, you know, they were somewhat in power before then, but even more. And have continued.
Chris?
I was
going to tell you, I've been told by my friends on the other side, spirit friends on the other side, the Galactic Alliance and Nostradamus and President Kennedy, their days are numbered. I mean, and they know it. One of the revelations that's come out recently from a gentleman named Corey Good, who was with the American Space Program for the last 20 years, he said that this entire solar system has actually been quarantined by what's called the Blue Avians, which is a 6th through 9th dimensional extraterrestrial race. I think they're part human and part bird, but at any rate, they care about us.
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think the negative entities, their days are numbered, Chris. That's my bottom line. So.
Well, yeah, I'm very hopeful myself, but I don't think, you know, it's something that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get out.
I agree.
And make things happen.
That's true. I agree.
Nobody's gonna do it for us. I talked about media and movies / music.
Right.
You know, I've worked with a bunch of people in L.A. That have wanted to make, you know, people go to our website, trineday.com. They'll see almost 100 books there. Hollywood has tried to make quite a few of those into movies.
Uh-huh.
Working with Academy Award-winning directors. And they first started just some little things. They started getting computerized phone calls. Then they got a computerized phone call that told them, well, gosh, we can see exactly what you're doing on your screen. And then they started chasing this guy around town. He called me up one time and says, well, you know, sometimes it was traffic, but I could not get away from this guy in the white SUV, and this guy was driving a Ferrari. Then they floated rumors about him. They said that this guy was out on Sunset Strip selling OxyContin at night, and his boss knew that wasn't true and didn't fire him. And then finally, when they were just continuing on making this project because they felt it was important, somebody met his wife on a street corner in L.A. and said, you know, if your husband doesn't stop what he's doing, we're going to kill him and then you. And what are your children going to do?
Oh, wow. Awful.
Okay. So, I mean, from a very pragmatic, you know, these guys are very serious, okay, about the future, about what they're going to do. I mean, you know, I sat in Hollywood another time with the people that owned the Terminator franchise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, you know, I was impressed, and I was glad that I didn't have to pick up the lunch bill. But, you know, I told them, I says, you know, you might have some political problems with this movie. And they says, well, once they get the Terminator movie out, they'll have enough money in their bucket, they can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, and they announced a $28 million movie of the true story of the Bilderberg Group.
Mm-hmm.
Within less than 6 months, their company was out of business. About 6 weeks, actually, their company was out of business, bankrupt. And you go out on the internet and it says, well, gosh, we really don't know what happened. They still have their money.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So it's very, you know, they're after the future of our world. They're after our children. They're after, you know, what's going to happen in the next 20, 30 years.
Sure.
And we have the opportunity still. We still have a constitutional republic. We don't need a revolution, a violent revolution, to change our form of government. What we need is we need people to recognize their form of government and vote. Because, I mean, that's part of the shtick these guys have been doing by killing our president, telling us, well, your vote doesn't count, okay? By stealing the election in 2000, they try and tell us, well, your vote doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all we've got to do, it's very simple. All we got to do is stand up, okay, and do it and vote. There's way more of us than there are of them.
Well,
I'm so proud of Oregon. I'm so proud of Washington, too. I mean, we've legalized marijuana, okay? We've taken, you know, during the first week in Oregon, they sold $11 million worth of marijuana. That's money that goes into, you know, schools and everybody instead of going off into the shadows.
Right, right.
And so, you know, we as a people can do amazing things, and that's what we as a people need to do.
Well, I agree with you, Chris. I agree with you. I just want to make a short program announcement for those who are just tuning in. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle here in the United States. And we're having a fascinating interview with Chris Mulligan, the publisher of Trine Publishing, on the Kennedy assassination and lots of other interesting topics. I wanted to just mention real quick, I mentioned this before, but to you when we talked earlier on the phone today, Chris, but you had posted a picture on Facebook of an argument that President Kennedy had with his vice president at the time, Lyndon Baines Johnson, on who was going to sit in that limousine that in which he was murdered on November 22nd. Could you tell my listeners a little bit about that picture? It's very interesting.
Well, basically, there was as told by some of the stories, there was an argument between Johnson and Kennedy as who was going to ride with him. Supposedly, Johnson wanted one of his enemies, Ralph Yarborough, to ride with him. And it got down to the point where supposedly Kennedy says, well, wait a minute, Connally, you're the governor of the state. You ride with And then, you know, Connally made the statement, oh, my God, they're going to kill us both.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And because, it, you know, it was, he got shot, too. And, you know, and we just had these conferences in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the most amazing things was the honor guard, the people that were, you know, assigned to the president for official things, you know, move the flags around and all kinds of things like that.
Right.
When he was dead, they were brought to the airport there, and you know, to meet the coffin, and to pick the coffin up and put it into the hearse or whatever it was, the hearse.
Right.
And then they got in a helicopter and shadowed this hearse all the way to Bethesda, and then they took it in. And some folks, one of our authors, William Law, and a friend of his, Mr. Singer, got these. The honor guard together with some of the people that were in Bethesda, and these people hadn't seen each other in 52 years. And all this time, the honor guard had always felt, well, you know, we had been, you know, carrying the body, because then they ended up carrying the body out of there, and then they carried it to the funeral. And once they met with these people from Bethesda, and the people from Bethesda says, well, you know, we received the president's body a half hour before you guys got here. I mean, these honor guard, they wanted to fight.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to fight these guys. They thought, well, you guys are lying. I mean, and then they finally, you know, they calmed down and figured, and they talked back and forth to each other, and these were all military people, and they finally figured out, well, wait a minute, you guys aren't lying. We aren't lying. And the feeling of betrayal that these honor guard members felt, it was still palatable when they talked about it. Still felt it very, very deeply, because you know, for 52 years they felt that they had been carrying the president's body in all this, you know, what you're supposed to do, and they of course had, you know, to get chosen to be the president's honor guard is an honor in itself, and quite an achievement.
Well, Chris, pardon me for interrupting, but what did they ship the body earlier to this place because they wanted to change it, or what did they do with this President Kennedy's body then?
It was manipulated. They had problems with the with the bullet, with the brain. They didn't want the brain to be there so that it could be examined correctly, because then you could tell how the bullets came in and out. And then there's quite a bit of, I mean, we had statements from the people that were in Bethesda that told us directly that what we know as the autopsy photos were not taken at where they were at and did the quote-unquote official autopsy. And a book we had there has statements from another lady who saw the official autopsy photos, which were different than the ones that they tell us that they're there. And then there are people that have done extensive research to show that the x-rays are completely fraudulent. And, you know, this is, Oswald was in jail. You know, there was no way that he could affect the autopsy. But there was a manipulation of the body somewhere between Dallas and Bethesda, where some people speculate that there was a place in the plane. Some people speculate there was a animal hospital that's right out from the gates from Bethesda where it might have been done. There's lots of speculation, the most obvious thing is that there was manipulation done.
So apparently what they did, Chris, then, is that they altered President Kennedy's body in some sort of macabre attempt to make sure that nobody would ever be able to investigate how many bullets had shot at him. Is that it? So they could somehow link it
from a practical standpoint,
and
to, you know,
yeah.
To back up the story that he was only shot from behind.
Oh, I see. That's what it was. Okay, well, yeah. Well, I think most people today, I know the majority of Americans believe that there was more than one shooter, of course, Oswald, and later information indicated that E. Howard Hunt, of all people, had confessed in his deathbed to his son, St. John Hunt, that he was one of the shooters of President
Kennedy.
Well,
no, he didn't confess to being one of the shooters.
Okay.
He confessed to being a bench warmer. He confessed to knowing about the plot, and he was lured to Dallas on that day. And when you talk to people that were in Dallas that day, especially people who were government assassins, they tell you that when they were walking down the street, they were recognizing quite a few people. And it's basically part and parcels of the wilderness of mirrors that you create with the cover-up. Because, you see, the crew that pulled it off was Hoover and Johnson. ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, was shadowing Hoover. And they got a conversation with Hoover, Johnson, Dulles, George H.W. Bush, and Nelson Rockefeller. Hoover and Johnson are low men on the totem pole. They can be blackmailed so much they're in their pocket. Dulles is a facilitator, head of the CIA, on the Warren, head of the War Division. And he's a lawyer.
Right.
And who's he a lawyer for? He's a lawyer for the Bush family and for the Rockefellers.
Right.
And then he had a script, and the script was written by a gentleman, for my money, by the name of Ed Lansdale.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some military people, two different ones, that have ID'd him for being in Dallas on that day. He was working in psychological warfare in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He did fake battles. He did do assassinations. One thing you do is you get a lot of people there just for mud, and to put another hand on their shoulders, especially these assassins, because they aren't supposed to talk anyway. And so, you know, they have to say, okay, where were you on November 22nd?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting.
So it's a wilderness of mirrors, but what we do know is that Oswald was an intelligence operative. He was a patsy. And it was a coup d'etat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's nice to know that the truth is finally coming out. What's interesting, and this is a topic I wanted to ask you about, Chris, the government, our government here in the United States, has classified all these documents with respect to the Kennedy assassination, and then they've given some ridiculous date, like they've locked it up for 50 years or 1,000 years. Could you...
2017!
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
It's a couple years away.
Okay. Well, but do you think it'll really happen, and do they have the authority to slap another 100 years on it?
I think that we can make it happen. There's way more than there of us than there are them, and yes, we can. You know, whether, I don't know, like I say, 2016 is going to get real interesting. It's going to get very, very interesting. And so... we'll just have to wait and see. But like, you know, I talked to folks down in Dallas. There's a gentleman by the name of James Tague, and he was a car salesman, and he drove his car as far as he could that day. And he had an appointment to go see somebody at noon, and he drove just right up into the Dealey Plaza, got out of his car, watched the motorcade come down. The shots rang out, and one of the shots, you know, missed and hit the curb, and part of the curb hit his cheek.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And so he was when they had a couple of sheriffs had noticed to talk to him that day, and he'd also given a statement to the FBI. And then the Warren Commission was coming out and saying, well, then they floated a trial balloon. The newspaper says, well, there was three shots. One hit Connolly and two hit Kennedy. Well, James Tague, you know, he could have just says, you know, he could have just sat down, but he didn't. He stood up and says, hey, what about me? And because of James Tague standing up, they had to come up with a quote-unquote magic bullet.
Oh, okay.
And so it's just like, you know, James, you know, stood up when history came calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of us need to stand up when history comes calling.
Sure.
And that would, you know, I'm sure Mr. Kennedy would enjoy us to do that.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's why he wanted this show on today, Chris. I was going to ask you, what do you think, what do you see for our future here on the planet?
Well, I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful because the tools that we're using, the personal computer and the internet, are amazing, amazing tools. I mean, they allow me to make a book, and the internet allows me to tell people about it. And all these other people out there on the internet, if you want to research anything, pretty much you can find it. Whether you want to, you know, research how to bake a cake, or you want to research the history of our planet, or whatever. And then we're having a conversation, and just as you know, there could be people listening in South Africa.
That's
true.
There
could be people listening right now in all over the world. The internet is not just an American phenomenon. It is a worldwide phenomenon. And, you know, we are the generation, you know, that saw, you know, our planet from outer space.
Well, that's true, Chris. And I think there's many beautiful and bright things in store for humanity.
I do, too. I think great things are going to happen with those, because we, you know, either, you know, like I tell, either you know, we're gonna be slaves, or you know, we're gonna stand up and have a wonderful society that the internet and the personal computer and all of this can help us engender.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, every year at this time of the year, I always do a program devoted to the assassination of President Kennedy and what he tried to do. And I think that if he lived, Chris, we would have had a far better society. For one thing, we would have missed Vietnam, because he would have taken the troops out. And over a million Vietnamese and 58,000 Americans died during that needless conflict. I don't think we would have the Federal Reserve issuing our money today. I think they'd be out of the loop. I think our Treasury Department would be issuing the money. I think the planet as a whole would be far better off than we are today, and I think that President Kennedy wanted to cooperate with the Soviet Union at the time and end the Cold War, especially in space, and I think that we would have had space exploration now going all over the universe and far beyond the solar system, if he'd lived. And I also see his brother also coming in to be president as well, if he had lived as well. So there was a series.
Amen.
Series of events happening, but I think the true nature of humanity, Chris, is to be benevolent, is to be loving and live each other with in love and gratitude and harmony, and so that's the kind of future I see for humanity. And even though there are negative influences on this planet, I can't deny that there are people here who actually probably enjoy war, enjoy fighting, enjoy killing each other. For the majority of people on this planet, they simply want to live and live in harmony. And in peace and in love. And I think that's the kind of future we'll have on this planet. I've read quite a bit of what Nostradamus, not only Nostradamus predictions, but also predictions by other people. And I think for those who refuse to change, I don't think they'll be allowed to stay on the planet. I think they'll be shifted off to another dimension, another Earth-like planet where they can live off their days in negativity. But the planet itself is alive, and it's tired of the wars and tired of the fighting. But we're going to – I think this is the start of a beautiful new time in human history, in spite of these things like the tragic Paris attacks and this tragic shooting in Santa Barbara a few days ago, which I think were false flag. I think they were engineered, just like Fukushima was engineered. 9/11 was engineered. All of these things were engineered to create fear and doom and gloom across the planet for humanity. But it's not going to work, because the Supreme Being is not going to allow it. And our destiny is not to become a planet full of war and hatred where we destroy ourselves. I don't see that happening at all.
I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
I go along with that. I think, you know, I feel very, very good about the future. Mm-hmm. And, that will not come about without, action and without work and without perseverance.
Right.
I think good things will happen. I mean, the American Revolution happened with, most of the people on the couch.
Right.
But it's happening. I mean, it's basically the creativity. It's like, before the personal computer and the internet, personal computer communication was going down. You didn't, very few people wrote letters to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you basically talked to each other on the phone or talked to each other in person. Then with the internet, all of a sudden people were composing emails. And then just the creativity that it engenders far surpasses the sophistry that these secret societies deliver to us.
Right,
And they're basically right now they have virtual control, okay, that tube, and their control over movies and music.
Mm-hmm.
The people clamor for the truth. The people clamor for liberty.
That's true.
And I've been in situations where I've seen where, liberty, freedom is contagious. It is contagious. And, once the spark sparks, it will continue.
Well, it will continue. One thing I want to tell you, I believe, Chris, and that we are all powerful spiritual beings meant to do good things. That's the nature of humanity, is to do good things, to make this planet a better place.
Amen.
And before he died, passed away a year ago, Dr. Masaru Emoto, who was considered one of the world's most spiritual men, had found that our thoughts do create our reality. I know I mm-hmm. mentioned this many times on the air before, but in case you're not familiar, he would have people, for example, Chris, he would have people send positive thoughts to a glass of water, where on the molecular level, the electrons and particles of the water would be turning these beautiful water crystals. On the other hand, if you take a glass of water, Chris, and you direct negativity and negative thoughts to that same glass of water, on the molecular level, the water disintegrates and turns these ugly thoughts. So he thought
mm-hmm.
he found basically that through our consciousness we can create a much better planet. And as I'm saying this, this studio has lit up again in this beautiful light. The sun's going down here in Seattle, and there's not a lot. There's some light, but it's getting darker outside. But it's very bright, very 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 bright light in here. That's always happens when I have angels coming to visit me here in the studio. But one of the things that you have to remember is that because we are powerful spiritual beings, our thoughts do have an effect on what we create, and so. This is why it's so important to emphasize the positive for the future, because we really do have a bright future. And
absolutely.
And the amazing thing is that I've been in touch with the other side for over 21 years now, and I've been very fortunate during the past year and a half to be in touch with Nostradamus. And he now is sitting at a desk, and I see him, Chris, at his desk in this smoky work-study area that he has, and he's holding his quill. And it's a symbolic image that I've got of him, because he's waiting for us to take the initiatives to make the correct decisions and to make this planet a better place, each of us, to think positive thoughts and do positive things to help each other out and humanity to create a better planet. He's
right.
Waiting for us to do that.
Well, that's good. Now, I've got a author, John Herlosky. He
mm-hmm.
wrote a book called A Sorcerer's Apprentice, The Skeptic's Journey into the CIA's Project Stargate.
Mm-hmm.
And this book was with a major agent, and then all of a sudden it just got dropped.
Really?
Hmm. And I read through it, because I'm used to, books about, intelligence spooks and all kinds of stuff like that.
Right.
And then at this conference, Jim Mars was there, and I was talking to him. And he said, yes, he'd done a big book on remote viewing that was stopped too. And, I looked at this book about remote viewing, and I said, oh, why are they suppressing this?
Right.
And it's about kind of what you were talking about, that, you know, this positiveness and you know, I mean, it's almost, you know, kind of Buddhist to a certain extent. There's, you know, a way to walk here. You know, there's a right way to do things.
Right.
You know, because I just found it amazing that, I mean, this guy was a policeman who was really skeptical about remote viewing. And so in the L.A. area, there was David Morehouse was giving some classes. And so he went to a class.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then he went on to several more classes, and it tells his story. And, you know, fascinating. Why are they suppressing this, you know? But
right.
it gets down to they want to keep us, you know, in fear and in negative and feed off, you know, because when you look at, like, Skull and Bones at their logo or symbol and,
right.
and their rituals and things, they are sorcerers that perform death magic.
Oh,
and they believe that by killing people, they get power, and by creating this fear, you know, they get power over us. And it's, for my money, it's criminal.
Well, I have to ask
you
this question for people who are unfamiliar with Skull and Bones. Now, was it established at Yale University? Is that, I remember, and George Bush Sr.?
Yale University, 1832, but we can trace it directly to the Illuminati,
okay.
Which
okay.
was formed in 1776, because there was a Phi Beta Kappa. Was formed in December 5th, 1776, at the College of William and Mary, and the Illuminati was the first Greek. It was a Greek, heavily Greek society. Phi Beta Kappa was the first Greek society here, College of William and Mary. And then it sent off two shoots, one to Yale and one to Harvard. Then came the Revolutionary War. William and Mary was shut down. The two at Harvard and Yale did not. Then in the early 1800s, we had a big anti-Illuminati scare in the late 1700s, and then a big anti-Masonic scare. And it became not, quote-unquote, cool to be a member of a secret society. So Harvard first, Phi Beta Kappa, went from being a secret society to being an open society. At Yale, it changed, and then in 1832, some of the members of Phi Beta Kappa went, once it became an open society, then formed Skull and Bones as a secret society.
Well,
and if you look at its rituals, they gleam a lot from the Illuminati.
Interesting. Now, we've in the United States, could you mention some members of the Skull and Bones, the people I mean?
How about George H.W. Bush,
okay.
John Kerry,
Prescott
Bush,
okay.
Avril Harriman,
okay.
The guy that owns Sears, Kmart, Blackstone Group, a bunch of other things.
Uh-huh. Wow. Are they internationally as well? Are they in other countries, for example, in Asia and Europe?
If you look at their membership list, and I mean, they went dark. The last year they were open was 1968, the year that George W. Bush went there. Then the only membership list that we can get come from a publication at Yale that isn't always correct, but. Once they started admitting ladies in 92, and so we see generally 6 to 8 ladies each year, and then we also see a lot more international names along the membership list.
Interesting.
So,
interesting.
Yes, they are international. And
now,
the secret societies... Their European base was a sister society in China with a little brother in Korea. They don't give a fig about the United States. They use the United States as a cat's paw to get the world into shape you use our blood and wallet, kill the Indians and take the land, and then their end game has been for a long time is to rule the world through China. China stands up and says, we're China, 5,000 years of civilization. Confucius, Confucius, peace, peace. Cur American war dog. Oh, and by the way, send all the remittances to us because we have all the factories. Okay, and your first liaison to China, official liaison, was George H.W. Bush.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
And then your first ambassadors came out of Skull and Bones, and then you had Prescott Bush, also a junior member of the Order of Skull and Bones, in Shanghai, starting to set up all those factories just right away.
Wow.
And that's, I mean... well, you see, I don't know something about, you know, computers and stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
Well, where are all these computers being made? Where are all these phones being made?
Sure, right.
they're
all
being made here.
They're being made in China.
Hey, right, and China's our communist enemy, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
And Russia's our communist enemy, right? But
right.
If you want to go to the International Space Station, where do you go?
You go to Russia.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
right.
What's this crap?
Yeah,
excuse my language.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, and I want to tell all my listeners around the world, that I'll be having Barr McLennan on a week from today.
Oh, I love Barr. Barr's a wonderful guy.
Well.
Barr's down to earth. I just, you know, spent some time with Barr, and I thank the world of Barr.
Well, great, great. Now, he was an attorney in Texas. He's a retired attorney. But he used to know LBJ, and I believe, if you could tell my listeners a little bit about his background, you probably know more.
Well, he was an attorney that was working in the office that was LBJ's attorney, Ed Clark.
Okay, okay.
And he learned some things from him. And I mean, Barr's son, Scott, was the press spokesman for Clinton for quite a few years.
Uh-huh.
And he's just, he's from Texas. People from Texas are, you know, good folk.
Okay.
And he's just a real down-to-earth, real good fella.
Didn't he write a book about how President Johnson had helped murder President Kennedy?
Yes. One of the first ones, Power, Blood, and Money, or something like that.
Right.
And
he
got attacked savagely for it. And there's people that don't like to talk about LBJ. But, you know, think about it. You want to kill the president, and you aren't going to get the vice president in on it beforehand,
right,
especially
right.
a vice president
right.
that's about ready to go to jail.
Right.
I mean, Lord have mercy. People say, well, oh, no, he wasn't involved because he didn't run for president later on. Well,
right.
I'm sorry, but I went to logic class, and that doesn't compute.
Right, right. Well, we'll have a really good interview talking about his experiences and about his book about how President Johnson conspired to help murder Kennedy back in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be really, really interesting. I just want to make a couple of announcements, and I'll give you the time for the rest of the time, Chris, for the floor. I want to thank everyone for listening today. This has been a program designed to, my goal of this program is to raise consciousness and let everyone know that we are powerful spiritual beings here, I believe, to do good things and to create a much better and much, much happier planet. 1 week from today, we'll be having Barr McLennan on, who was an attorney associated with Lyndon Baines Johnson, who quit his association once he found out that President Johnson had conspired to help murder President Kennedy. In 2 weeks, we will be having a very special program on for the children of Fukushima, and that'll be fascinating then. I can't wait to have that on. And I just want to thank everyone for tuning in today. And, Chris, we got about 30 seconds left, and I give you the floor for any final comments you'd like to make today.
Well, again, God bless everybody. God bless the USA. God bless our founding fathers. And, you know, vote. And when, you know, when history comes around and asks you to take part, do your
please ask.
Do.
Ask not.
Don't shrink away from your duty to yourself, your children, their children, their children, their children, their children,
Okay, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on the air today, and thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye, and have a wonderful weekend.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.